Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
And I never would have probably tried Spam if it weren't for my dad.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Look at the meaty thighs on this Italian player.
Well, last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I was freaking brothers every way like MJ.
Zardoz.
How dare you, Luis Valbuena's a national treasure.
I'm a pepper jack guy.
Well, I most definitely have a throbbing Corey Kluboner boner.
So you're delicious and sticky.
All right, so as you guys know, FSWA awards were last night. Congratulations to everybody that was announced on XM and on Twitter through FSWA. I don't know if many people are aware of this, but we actually won some more obscure awards that they gave away off air. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. They do that at the Oscars and they do that at the Grammys. They give out a few awards that they don't show on the telecast. And so we kind of had that. We were lucky enough to do that last night to get a few awards that were given away that weren't part of the announcements that were kind of the pre-show, I guess you could say. So we actually got three of them. I was going to run down those categories real quick. So the first one we got was Van. I don't know if you were made aware, but you actually won for the best Nathan Dokken impression.
Excellent. You know, there was a big grassroots thing where they were trying to get me in, and I'm glad it worked out. Thanks again to Joe O for really spearheading that effort.
Definitely. That was something that gained a lot of momentum in the last week, but it definitely was out there.
Competition.
Yeah, absolutely. And another one that we got, Van, you got another one along with myself. We actually won the award for the best 2 hour plus catcher preview.
You know, it's great to win, but it's also worth pointing out that there's no one else in the category. So that's kind of like a default win.
Right. Well, a win's a win.
Exactly. You know? So high five us. Boom.
Right on. Yeah, no doubt. And then so the last one, Nate, I don't know if you were aware that you were nominated for this one, but you actually brought home the best random weird accent prospect pronunciation award with your pronunciation of Austin Bick. So
Austin Bick.
There you go. See, that's an award winner right there. So I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that we were represented there as well, but we were left off kind of the main slate there. So
victories for the Nasty Cast. Yeah, we should celebrate. That's for sure. Wine and booze on me, kind of. Basically just go to your alcohol cabinets and get some and drink. But it's on me.
But you told us to, so that counts.
Bingo.
Yes.
It's about time that we are nationally recognized. Welcome to episode 141 of the Nasty Cast, everybody. Today, we are previewing the catcher position with the legend himself, Lenny Melnick. And I am Nathan Dokken. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dokken, joined as always by Manly Van Lee.
Yes. Hello. I'm here. I also want to point out that, you know, in previous years past, my old podcast, The Backup Catcher, did in fact win some of those additional awards that weren't broadcast. Brian Vaughn, my old co-host, won the award for, it's actually called the Eric Karros Award for the most whiny, nasally voiced podcast host out there. So congratulations to Brian for that. And then we actually won the award for podcast that talks way more about the Blue Collar Comedy Tour than baseball award. So they're out there. Just be sure and to look for them, because podcasts like that, podcasts like this, we deserve these awards and they're worth paying attention to.
Absolutely. And thanks for announcing those, Ron Rigney.
You got it. I thought everybody should know that. And, you know, you mentioned the legendary Lenny Melnick as well, and I've alluded to this before. I'm very happy to finally be able to do a podcast with Lenny, because, as you know, him and I and Sean Manaya actually have more in common than the fact that we all can throw a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. We are all graduates of Indiana State University as well. So it's kind of nice, like I told you guys before we signed on, it's kind of nice to have, you know, 50% of the Indiana State Mount Rushmore on the podcast tonight. I think you'd put Sean Manaya up there maybe, and then this guy named Larry Bird might go up there as well. But, you know, I think it goes definitely, I'd put Lenny Melnick at the top. I'd have to put myself in at second, and then maybe Bird at three, and then Manaya at four possibly. So feels good to be able to do that.
Perfect. Yeah, and it's I think that one of the greatest images that has ever popped into my brain would be Lenny Melnick throwing a fastball.
Yes.
And no catchers, because he hates catchers. He would just be throwing it at a wall.
It's like in tennis, if you ever go to a tennis court, there's always that just board up on the in the fence, and that you're supposed to be able to just bat the ball up against it by yourself. We always called it the no friends board.
Yeah. Oh, that's so sad.
Or you might be throwing it at a catcher, but not necessarily for the catcher to catch it, but just throwing it at him really hard because he doesn't like him.
Maybe their back is turned or something. Yeah.
Or they're batting and he just wants to plunk them or something. So.
Let's get him a first pitch opportunity where he can just, you know, when the ceremonies are going on, he just, and the catcher's not paying attention, he just drills him in the back of the helmet.
That'd be almost as good as that guy that got hit in the balls last year.
Oh, yes. Or 50 cents throw.
Oh god, so good. What's your favorite first pitch? Tweet us at nastycastbgfs rather on Twitter. Van is at manly van lee and Ron is at the real Made. And there are several ways that you can support this fine podcast. If you enjoyed, you can give us 5 stars and review us on iTunes. That helps people find us because you know, it actually shows up when people search for it. So that'd be a good way to expand our listener base. And you can also donate to our Patreon if you want to ship us a buck or two. It's patreon.com/nastypod. And with a donation of any amount, you get a free copy of the 2018 Nasty Draft Guide, which we are furiously working on at all hours of the day. And you'll also get access to the position podcast a little bit earlier than the general public, which apparently I still haven't listened to, but apparently you guys went 2 hours on catcher.
2 hours on the catcher position. Now, admittedly, we did rank 32 of them, so we had quite a few. And then Ron went off on this tangent about DFS, so there was a little extra stuff in there that's involved. The Patreon, it's going great. You'll get your rewards. We're going to release basically each individual position part of the guide as we go along, and then I'll release a full guide once we get to the end of that, which hopefully should be soon. I'm actually done with the catcher aspect of it, the part of it, but I'm having a bit of a struggle as far as formatting and getting the file type right. So I'll get that sorted out in the next day or two and go from there. So I'll send you guys data for what to write for first base, and that'll be the next part of the guide that comes out. And don't forget, like you said, rate and review on iTunes. Give us 5-star ratings. And if you do, you'll be in the 2018 NastyCast League.
And you want to be in that league to compete against us and get your soul crushed, because I am the back-to-back champion of the podcast league. Not to brag. But also, listen to Fantrax Dynasty Baseball, which is a podcast on Fantrax, you know, that you can listen to just about anywhere. And we all do that as well. And it's an awesome podcast. It's really blowing up. And today we get to talk about my top 100 prospect list. So that's going to be fun.
Exciting.
Any other plugs to get out before we get on to Lenny?
I'll jump in first. We just recorded and posted our first episode of the Launch Angle podcast. That's going to be hosted by me at Manly Van Lee, and also joined by Rob Silver and Jeff Zimmerman. It's going to be a redraft centric podcast similar to this one. That's a little more straight-laced, but give us a check out. We're going to shoot for the 45-minute mark, have a little bit of a shorter podcast each week. We're going to record on Wednesdays during the day and have it out Wednesday evening. So give it a listen. The first week here is a lot of introductions, so you'll get to hear about what Jeff does and what Rob does, what I do. And then we also go over some draft strategies and the starting pitching market and just the state of it today. So give that a listen at Fantrax Radio, or I'm sure on whatever your random podcast device or app you use is.
Well, you can listen with some tin cans and string too, I think.
That works too, yeah. It just has to be a really long string sometimes. Oh,
the people on that show are not embarrassments to the industry. So there is that to look forward to as well.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I'm on there, but the other guys are not so much. But I did want to point out, I just wrote an article for Fantrax that dealt with three true outcome players. I did a lot of research as this one, built a spreadsheet involving from the year 2000 up through last year, all the players I consider that. And it was a really fun article to write and kind of eye-opening. So definitely check that one out on Fantrax. And after you see the graph with basically a synopsis of every year, below it's a link. Click on that and you'll get the full spreadsheet, including names of three true outcome players for every year, including Adam Dunn, who is on there 12 years and nine straight at one point.
The donkey.
Very good. You got anything you want to plug there, Robald?
We got over at Big Guy Fantasy Sports, my AL portion of my preseason on deck circle, chronicling some guys in each division that could help your fantasy team sooner rather than later. A few guys that might win a job in spring, a few guys you might have to wait a little bit on, but that will be up. You know, we got the Fantrax pod, you know, Van alluded to. We did marathon on catchers as well. And to be fair, I was asked a question about DFS, so that's why I went on a tangent. But nonetheless, Van asked me a question about it. It wasn't just random.
You brought it up first, though.
Oh, I don't know about that.
If only there was some way to prove this. It was recorded.
Did we record it?
Don't talk about witchcraft like that. Sorry.
Sorcery.
You're the man now, dog.
We'll be getting Fantastics going here in a couple weeks as well with some spring training stuff also. So looking forward to getting that going.
Well, on that front, I guess I'll go ahead and announce that I will not be with Fantastics this year. I'm moving on to Razzball. I actually took a job with them, and I'll be posting my first article this coming Monday. You know, definitely nothing against Fantastics. I love working for them. It's just as far as my schedule goes, it works out a little bit better working for Razzball. So stoked to be joining that team with Prospect Jesus over there and, of course, Gray and a bunch of other cool dudes. So I'm really excited for the opportunity to write for them. So you can check me out on there as well. And on Fantrax last week, I wrote up sort of a primer to Brooks Baseball. So if anybody out there is listening and they've never used Brooks Baseball before, I would recommend that as sort of a jumping off point. You know, just kind of follow that, read it, and familiarize yourself with the ins and outs and how to use it a little bit. It was pretty well received, and I'm going to be putting out part two this week. I did the pitchers last week. I'm going to do the hitters this week. So I've got that coming out. And then, on Razzball, I'll be doing some stuff. Actually, because their RCLs are switching to Fantrax, so I'm going to be helping out the RCLers a little bit as far as an intro to Fantrax.
I don't even know what that is. What's an RCL?
The Razzball Commenters League. They have a whole bunch of leagues just for the commenters that frequently, I don't know, comment.
Gotcha.
So they all have their own pack of leagues there, and they switched from ESPN to Fantrax this year. So I'm going to help out with that transition a little bit. And then I'll be working on some team previews after that. So you have that to look forward to.
Very good. I thought it would stand for Really Cool Lake, by the way. Like Lake Taneycomo somewhere around here. That would be a real RCL in my book.
I think my favorite RCL is Lake Minnetonka, where you can purify yourself.
Good name.
In the waters.
Good name.
Yeah. All right. With that, let's take a quick break here. Come back and talk about catchers and recap a little bit of the past week's signings with Lenny Melnick. Enjoy.
Nasty.
All right, here we are on the Nasty Cast, and super excited to welcome back to the show the legend himself, the great Lenny Melnick. Welcome back to the Nasty Cast.
Yeah, well, it's always nice to be with the Nasty Boys, you know. But don't forget, you know, you guys start getting nasty with me. I want you to know my motto, because when the going gets tough, the legend gets going. I just want you to know that.
Well, I'm fully intimidated, so don't worry, I won't be too nasty.
You can take it either way you want. Either I get going or I just get going, you know?
Well, I tell you what, the Mets really got going by signing Todd Frazier this year. Segway City. God, I'm good. Yeah. He signed a contract with the Mets, 2 years, $17 million. Lenny, what was your reaction to this deal?
I liked it a lot because I'm a big Todd Frazier guy. When Todd Frazier was with Cincinnati, he was, you know, people say, who do you root for? I root for the players that are nice to me. And Todd Frazier actually became a friend of mine. So I kind of, he is that guy who is the clubhouse guy. And for those of us who played any kind of ball, whether in high school or whatever, it's that older guy who is the team leader. And sometimes that makes a big difference. And let's hope he could do that. I'm a big Met fan, but I remember when Troy Percival and Cliff Floyd were signed by Tampa when they were at the end of their careers, and they made Tampa a viable team. Hopefully Frazier can do it for the Mets.
Nice. So is this just, I guess we'll go to you next, Van. We forgot to establish an order we're going to do this, but we can go to you. What about his fantasy value? Does this pull him out of the dregs for you?
I don't think he was necessarily in the dregs. I think if you're drafting Todd Frazier, you know what you're going to get. Although he has had kind of a bizarre career where one year he'll walk a lot. The other year, of course, he hits for a ton of power. We are only 1 year removed from a 40 home run season. We know he's not going to hit for average, but maybe he can hit that 230, 240 range, walk a bit, and provide some decent power. I think he's got enough pop in the bat that the City Field factor doesn't really make too much of a difference. He's still going to get to his numbers. And I think he hits more than the 17 or so he did last year. So I'd expect maybe 25 to 30 with, like I said, a low average, but hopefully he walks a bit to offset that. And I think it was a decent pickup for the Mets. Obviously, it didn't cost them a whole lot of money. And in particular, like MLB trade rumors at the outset of the offseason said he'd get a 3-year, $33 million deal or something like that. And he did not clear that at all. So I think it's a pretty cheap deal and a good one for both team and for player, just because he at least has somewhere to play.
Yeah, it's been just a crazy off season, so I think everybody's going to end up signing for cheaper. What do you say, Ron?
Yeah, I back to what Lenny said about him being a nice guy. Todd Frazier just looks like a nice guy. Like, he just looks like he would be a genuinely nice guy. So that, I think he has a kind face, I think.
Just like you, Ron. Just like
you. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I like the move for the Mets. I think it's good. I think it's good for the amount of money they spent. I think it's good to get a little bit of pop in that lineup. However, one of the things that I looked at was I was curious to see how he hit career-wise at all the parks that he's going to be playing in that division. So with City Field, he's a 250 career hitter. Chase Field, 196. Okay. Or Citizens Bank, I'm sorry, 217. And when you go down the list here, Nationals Park, 179, and then Marlins Park with the big goofy dolphin thing in the back, 267. So I don't know necessarily if I like that. Obviously, like the averages at the parks that he's going to be hitting at. But I think that, you know, he's one of those guys that the power can kind of translate 20, 25 homers wherever he's at. So overall, yeah. I think it's a bargain for the Mets. I think it's a pretty solid move, considering we're this late in the game, too, as far as free agents with the way the market's kind of stalled.
If I could add one more thing about Frazier, what I always liked about him was his ability to steal bases. Now, he's not going to steal 20, but if he stole, what, 4 or 5 last year? And by the way, he did hit 27 home runs. He said at least 27 or more for, what, 4 years in a row. But the thing is that if he can steal you 10 bases, because I know he likes to run. He was talking about stealing bases and how much fun he has and everything. But if he could steal you 10 bases and you can come up with a team of Goldschmidt with 15 to 20 steals, and then Will Myers with another 15 to 20 steals, and maybe Todd Frazier with 10, you can come up with 40, 45 stolen bases from your corner infielders. And that would be pretty good in a year where stolen bases may not be easy to get.
Absolutely. And that's something that I've tried to work into my strategy this year in my drafts is just focusing on those guys who also chip in a little bit here and there. And I'm with you. I think that Frazier can get back up into double digits in the stolen bases this year. It's kind of weird that they fell off so much last year. So I'm pretty optimistic for him bouncing back a little bit this year. Our other piece of news before we get to catchers, is Sung-Hwan Oh. He was signed by the Rangers this week. So did the Rangers have themselves a new closer, Lenny?
Well, I think they do. You know, Claudio was never announced as the closer last year. He was only called the option. That was it. It was really weird. They never announced him being closer.
It was really weird, yeah.
Yeah, and every time, you know, they said he was an option. But he had an interesting year. He had strikeouts about 6 per 9 innings, and yet he had, I think, one of the best rates, what is it called, the O rate, where, you know, he got batters to swing of pitches out of the strike zone. I think he was number one, and yet he only had six strikeouts per nine. But they want somebody with a little bit more zip. Keon Keeler, he's got a bad arm. And I thought, I know they signed Mike Minor. I know they signed him to be in the rotation. And I've been going out and saying that I think Mike Minor is going to be the closer there by the end of the year. Matt Bush is going into the rotation. So I think O's, if he's got anything left, and that we don't know, O's going to get a shot to be the closer.
Yeah, I think this is going to end up being exactly like what it was last year, where we were kind of looking at Claudio Bush, Keon Keeler, and the Texas croissant himself, Jose Leclerc, all vying for save opportunities, and no one knew what was going to happen because it was so random. I think it's going to be a similar deal this year with maybe slightly more stability, just because I think they do give O the job at the outset, but I'm not convinced he can do it, particularly in moving to a more hitters-friendly park. I think there could be a few more bumps than he even had last year, which really wasn't as bad as put out to be. But either way, it's a situation that bears monitoring, because right now there's no clear-cut closer. I think if I'm at the back half of my draft and I'm just trying to find a guy who might be able to do it, I'm going to take O and just see what happens.
Well, the good thing about O, if I may say, is that whenever he throws, it's so hittable that you don't even need a catcher. All right.
So you put somebody else in the outfield, then you're good.
Yeah, you can have four outfielders out there because every ball he throws, they hit, so they don't need a catcher.
Is that kind of like pulling the goalie in hockey?
That's very much. That's a good point. Pulling the goalie in hockey, right? I like that.
I don't know. For me, it kind of looks like a lot of guys that to me are similar. I think maybe as far as ability level. Lenny, my question was, do you think Mike Minor is a guy that is going to maybe challenge for that job out of spring training, or do you think that's something that might happen just maybe midway through the season?
Definitely not out of spring training. He has been promised a chance to get into the rotation.
Okay.
Don't forget, he's been out for a year or two. He did get six saves last year, so keep that in mind. He was very good. He's just unhittable. He's got a slider that you can't hit, and but he will start the exhibition. They promised him he'd have a chance to be the in the rotation. But that was the promise, that he would have a chance. People forget that. I know I argued with Jim Bowden about it, and I said, Jim says he would have a chance to make the rotation. But if something goes wrong, and of course, as I said, Matt Bush, they're going to try to get him in the rotation too. Mm-hmm. So let's see what happens. But Minor is a good, he's got a chance. They all have a chance until they sign O. That kind of swayed me in the O direction.
Well, now let me throw out two real quick. The dark horse that could push for the closer's job, Bartolo Colon, there. Yeah. And I also want to throw in, I think I'm the first person to coin the nickname Big Texie for him. So I just want to throw that out there, make sure everybody knows that they need to call him Big Texie.
Okay, but the Big Texie, isn't he the designated pinch runner?
I think he's going to split time. He's going to be like kind of like the Otani of the Rangers this year. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
he's going to be the anti-Otani. He's not going to pitch and he's not going to hit.
So then we can maybe call him the No-Tani.
No-Tani.
Oh, wow. Ron's on fire today.
I hate people funnier than me. I hate it.
Ron, we're hanging up on you. You're off the podcast.
All right. It's been great, guys. Take care.
Yeah, this is kind of a cluster. I'm not entirely confident in any one option. Claudio, I would like to think, he's a lefty. He was just death on lefties last year, too. Only allowed a 164 weighted on base to lefties last year. It kind of makes sense to platoon these guys if you just look at their splits from last year, because Seung-Hwan Oh just got obliterated by lefties. He allowed a 407 weighted on base, and his so his FIP, if you want to just go that route, is 7.19, whereas he took care of righties really, really handily. Yeah, so at 265 weighted on base against righties. So if they wanted to platoon those guys, they could, and that would make a bit of sense. But I Claudio, he's still I believe he's pre-arbitration, and so that might factor in. And just being a lefty for matchups, a lot of times managers want to go that route. And so I wouldn't be terribly surprised if we saw someone besides Claudio in there. I'm really trying to probably just stay away from this situation in drafts this year unless they come out and say, you know, such and such is going to be the guy out of spring training. But let's see, that's going to do it for the news this week. Let's move on to catchers because everybody loves talking about catchers in great detail. I know Lenny does. So we're going to start off.
I hate catchers. I hate the word catcher. I hate the word catch. And I'll tell you, I mean, it's true. When I was in Indiana State, Ron, remember that school?
I
was in Indiana State. I went to a doctor and he said, you caught a venereal disease. So ever since you told me I caught it from a girl, I hate catchers.
Fair enough.
It's true. It's a true story, right, Ron?
I've heard things. Yeah, it's a legend. It's a legendary story on campus. So
yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Next case.
It's all tied in. So. I'll get your, maybe you'll be for this then. There's kind of been a groundswell of support for the movement away from two catcher formats to just one catcher and then maybe adding another catcher, another utility position for the hitters, Lenny. What is your stance on that?
That's stupid.
You're still for Osprey.
You play two catchers, it's like playing Monopoly and say, I don't want to play with Baltic anymore, right? You can't do that. Two catchers. I know it's, you know, everybody, I don't want a kicker. You know, I don't want to, that's what the game is. Why change the game? I mean, I don't like catchers. I don't, but it doesn't mean that I don't have a strategy for catchers. I don't spend any money for catchers. As a matter of fact, 2 years ago in Tout Wars and in Labor, I had the same catching core, and it cost me $3. I had A.J. Pruszynski and A.J. A.J. Ellis. I had two A.J.'s, and I had them both in Tout Wars and Labor. But look, I have a strategy for catchers. To me, it's a benefit. I see all these guys spending money on Buster Posey, who's going to get you 75 RBIs, yip-de-ki-yo-ki-ye. And no, I'm not doing it. So I like the two catchers. You don't change something because it's easier. And that's why everybody wants to change it.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's all a fake strategy thing. They're just trying to take the strategy out of it. But that's the whole point of having the two catchers is it makes you work. So I prefer keeping the two catchers. I think it just makes it too easy with the utility player thing. So I'd rather just stick with what it is.
That's pretty good.
I don't really care. I mean, you play whatever, like you said, you play with whatever format the league is and you stick with it. So two catcher, one catcher, I mean, it doesn't really make a difference. But I mean, it's like, Lenny, that's a good point too, with the kickers and things. I've been in fantasy leagues like that where every year they throw out the vote, do we get rid of kickers in defense this year? Well, no, even though they're annoying, there's been weeks of my game has been won by my kicker or by the stats my catcher has put out. So, I mean, if you know what you're doing and you have a strategy that works for you, whether you want to spend up for Gary Sanchez and then get a scrub as your second one, or you want to go with a couple middle tier or end of the list guys, you got to figure out how you're going to handle it. But I mean, it's just something that you've got to adapt to and you've got to figure it out. But yeah, when you get down past about maybe, you know, number 12 to 15, it starts to get a little dicey, but that's kind of the fun of it for me in a draft is figuring out what you're going to do with that.
Yeah, I'm for the two catcher format as well, but I'll just play devil's advocate just to present an argument for the alternative. It's just that MLB teams more and more are just going with straight platoons. Whether or not it's righty lefty, it's nobody's getting, you know, outside of Buster Posey and before last year, Jonathan Lucroy, you know, there's pretty much nobody that's getting 500 plate appearances. And so it's really been a downward trend. And so it's just been more of a crapshoot and just a crap hole of a position overall over the last couple of years. And it seems to only be getting worse. So that kind of, I don't know. If you're into that, then that's the argument for the other side. Like I said, I'm still in for the two catchers, but
okay. It's just harder to find a good one. That's all. That's it.
Yeah, and there's I feel like if you just go to one catcher, it kind of takes the strategy out of the position as well. Like right now, with the climate, you know, there's Gary Sanchez and like clearly at the top, and then a couple other guys that are kind of okay, and the rest are pretty much all the same until you get down into like the 20s, and yeah, it's just all gross. But we'll talk about that a little bit coming up here. But right now, we're going to field a question from Barry Baker. Van, you have that handy?
That's right, I do. Barry Baker, at Barry Baker, some number. I don't know. I didn't look at it on Twitter.
8664. I've got it memorized by now.
Somehow you have it memorized. Very good. Yeah, he asked me a question today. Well, two questions, technically, so we'll start with the first one. First off, with Kyle Schwarber, he wants to know, if Contreras gets injured, what's the chance that Schwarber could get 50 innings behind the dish, or is Caratini just flat out the backup and he's going to get playing time? Lenny, we can go ahead and start with you. What do you think about that?
Well, I think Caratini's, I don't know a lot about him. I know he's a switch hitter and so on down the line. But knowing the effect, look, if Madden still thinks that Kyle Schwarber could be the leadoff hitter, and he's expressed that many times in the offseason, he still thinks that Schwarber could bat leadoff, then he's probably the same guy who thinks that Schwarber could be a catcher. So I would say that there is a chance. If Contreras gets hurt, I think they will give Schwarber limited times behind the plate. So that's a very distinct possibility.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. 50 innings is an awful high number. I think it'd have to be a major injury for Contreras for that to happen. So I think maybe he gets catcher eligibility. So maybe he gets his 20 games or whatever it may be. But I don't know if he's going to really be thrown in there as like an everyday guy if Contreras gets hurt. I think they'd throw him behind the dish once a week here and there just to mm-hmm. see if they could get his bat in the lineup.
Yeah, and you got to think too. You got to remember it's Joe Madden, and Joe Madden likes to mix and match and put guys in different spots. And you know, like we talked about before in the second base preview, you had this crazy guy named Anthony Rizzo that was eligible at second base. So he likes to do these strange things. And I think Van, you're dead on when you say that he might get enough to gain eligibility, but I don't think it's going to be a ton of pure innings. I think that just to get the bat in the lineup, like you said. But I think if something happens to Contreras, I think he'd rather go, you know, a little bit safer behind the plate, and maybe put a guy back there that might have a little bit better defense if you're losing Contreras's bat. So I don't know. He might be back. He'll be back there a little bit, but I don't think it's going to be a ton of innings behind the plate.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add to that. I don't think there's any chance that we see Kyle Schwarber even, you know, getting what's the minimum, like 10 games pretty much across the league. Or across fantasy leagues in general, as far as qualifying a catcher. I don't think we even see that. Even, you know, they've got Chris Jimenez there too, right? So, yeah, superstar.
Don't forget Chris. But what happens if Darvish doesn't come over? Do they cut Chris Jimenez?
They could, because I mean that's the whole reason they signed him. So I don't
right?
know. Or if he sticks in the maybe they send him down and he says okay, he accepts the minor league assignment. Maybe yeah. that'll work. But you're right though. If Darvish doesn't come over, I think there something might happen with that.
Yeah, I mean Jimenez. Let's face it, he batted .218. So you know that's very impressive. And also, you know, Ian Happ, he could force Schwarber behind the plate once in a while too. So. Depends how good Ian Happ is. So I think Schwarber, as mentioned, I think we'll get eligibility.
Fair enough. The second part of the question is Tomas Tillis stash worthy in a 16-14 team mixed league if Real Muto happens to get traded? I don't know if he actually does get traded, because a big thing they said about that was the reason they wanted to trade Yelich is they felt he might become a distraction in the clubhouse. They didn't think Real Muto would be, which is why the Marlins haven't really moved him so much. I think they should. So I don't know if he even gets traded. But the crux of the question then is, what's Tomas Tillis' worth?
Nothing.
Yeah. Oh, I'll chip in. I really think that Real Muto does get traded, and they are talking to teams now, and one team that has shown some interest in JT Real Muto is the Houston Astros. So it doesn't seem like Real Muto is going to be there. Eventually, at some point, when they get a decent offer, I think they're going to trade him. So I would definitely take Telus and stash him. Stashing him is fine. No problem.
Are you stashing him anywhere, Ron?
That's the first I heard of the Astros. I think that's a pretty intriguing move. But, I think with everything that the Marlins are doing, I think if he gets late enough in your draft, I think it's a fair stash. I mean, you know, once again, this lineup is not going to be that good. We've talked about that week in and week out. But somebody's going to have to try to drive in runs, and somebody's going to get volume and get plate appearances. So, I mean, based upon that, if he kind of becomes the starter by default, I think that vaults him up there. You know, he's comparable to any of those guys that we're going to have at the bottom of the top 30 list. I mean, he's not going to give you a whole lot as far as any specific counting stats, but he is going to get the chances, so that makes him valuable.
Yeah, I think Barry's in some crazy deep, like 30-team league, and maybe that's where I would be stashing a catcher, but in nowhere else, you know, and even in dynasty leagues, I'm not stashing catchers. I don't care about catchers. I'll just turn them off the waiver wire. So I'm not going out of my way to roster Telus anywhere.
Oh, and it's worth pointing out, too, I don't know if you guys know this, there's another team that's really interested in JT Realmuto, and that would be my team, but that sure as hell didn't work out.
Who's that, the Nets?
No, it's a fantasy league joke between the three of us.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry about that.
We just had We had a whole freaking nightmare go down with a mistake trade, so yeah.
I'm talking about that.
It was a debacle, if you will.
Indeed.
Sounds like one of my marriages.
Yes, indeed. I do have some to talk to you about that, Van, once we're all wrapped up on these podcasts, by the way. But moving on, we've got more catchers to discuss. ADP Wars. That's right. It's time for some ADP Wars.
War has changed. It's no longer about nations, ideologies, or ethnicity.
Instead, it's more about laser show out in Baxton, Pedroia.
I wrote down Mazzara here, and I disagree with myself.
I'm gonna give a slight edge to Eric Hosmer.
Well, you can't make us sound any dumber than we already do. And of course, how this works is we got two catchers who are right next to each other in average draft position, and we're going to pit them against each other in a battle to the death, which is false. That's a false statement. We're actually just going to decide who we would draft at that certain spot in our drafts this year. And we're going to start off with Wilson Contreras versus Buster Posey. Wilson Contreras has an ADP of 59, and Posey is right behind him at 65. So, Lenny, we shall start with you, Wilson Contreras or Buster Posey this year.
No doubt, without thinking, it's Wilson Contreras, who's going to hit you between 22, 23, 25 home runs. Posey's probably going to land on that 15 home run mark with 75 RBIs. So I will take, Posey's going to hit a little bit higher, but Contreras probably will hit very well, 285. I got him projected at 285 with 25 home runs, 85 RBIs, and Posey falls behind that. So I'll take Contreras.
I completely agree. It's if Contreras were less of a guy who hit for a good batting average, this might be a question, but he hits 270 to 280, so he's really kind of, in my opinion, closer to Gary Sanchez than he is Buster Posey, because he's going to provide you virtually across the board. He walks, hits for average, has power, steals a couple bases here and there, so it's definitely Wilson Contreras for me, and particularly with a six-pick difference. It is worth saying that in this day and age, with batting average becoming harder to find, that Posey, if he manages to hit 320 again, that's going to be hugely valuable. But it's just not worth it considering the other benefits you'll get out of Contreras.
Yeah, I'm going to make it three in a row, Contreras. And when you look at the slash lines, there's a difference. I mean, obviously, when you look at – I'm comparing Posey's career numbers to what Contreras did last year. There is a little bit of a difference in the average. About a 20-point difference in the OBP, but the slugging definitely goes to Contreras. And you know, like you guys said, you're getting more power with him. You're going to probably get about 10 to 12 more home runs. probably going to get more RBIs, get more runs scored. And plus, too, I like the fact that he's not got all of the mileage on him that Buster Posey has, which kind of leads me to believe that the Giants will be putting him a little bit more at first base maybe than they have in the past, possibly, to kind of ease that grind. But when you look at Posey, he's played 140 games every year since 2012. So, yeah, I mean, he's consistent, but at the same time, you got to kind of wonder when that might start catching up with him. And maybe this is the year. I don't know. But I think overall, I think number-wise, he's going to be in there. But it's just a matter of does that catcher grind from year in and year out kind of start to catch up with him. But definitely going to go Contreras here over Posey, no doubt.
Yeah, this is going to be a clean sweep. I really think that there's still some upside with Contreras. I think there might be another level yet to be unlocked with him. If you look at his second half splits from last year, he walked 14.7% of the time, only struck out 17.3% of the time, and he hit .305 in the second half. Obviously, you know, somewhat of a small sample size, but you know, like you touched on, Van, there might not be that big a disparity in batting average between these guys, and the power clearly goes to Wilson Contreras by a landslide. You know, you're getting like Joe Mauer kind of numbers out of Buster Posey these days. You're lucky if you get 10, 12 homers. And so I'll take the hit in batting average, and it might not even be much of a hit at all, to be perfectly honest, between these guys. And you're definitely getting the power and potentially the RBIs too. You know, the playing time goes to Posey as well, but I just think there's a lot of upside with Contreras. So moving on to our next matchup, and that is going to be Jonathan Lucroy with an ADP of 206 versus Mike Zunino right behind him with an ADP of 207. So Lenny, we'll start off with you again. Who you got here, Jonathan Lucroy or Mike Zunino?
I am going to go with Mike Zunino. And I'll tell you why. First of all, who knows where Lucroy is, but even I don't care where Lucroy signs up. I always take the position that if something different happens to a player, I pay attention to that. And if you remember, Zunino really struggled with his batting average and all that stuff for a number of different years. And then when they sent him down to AAA in Tacoma in May, they worked on him and they changed his approach to the plate and they did some stuff with how he holds the bat. And then he in 400 bats, he hit about .251 with 25 home runs. And that was in about 120-something games. So, you know, this is something he could make a big deal on this team. And I'm just going to take the position that this is a guy that I think made some changes. The results were very good. And I'll stick with that.
I'm going to go the opposite. I'm going to take Lucroy here. Yeah, you're right. We don't know where he's at. I hope he still ends up in Colorado, but I don't think that happens. We'll see. But as far as the two go, Zunino scares me because I just generally don't trust anyone who strikes out 37% of the time. And if we take away last year's batting average of .251, in 2016 he hit .207, in 2015 he hit .174. I think he's closer to that than he is a .250 hitter. He also had a really insane BABIP at .355. So I don't believe the average one bit. And power's getting easier and easier to come by for me, so I'm just not that interested. Lucroy, for everyone saying he had such a horrible season, and by all means, he didn't have a great season. It really wasn't as bad as I anticipated. He only hit 6 homers, stole 1 base. The home runs are disappointing, but he did slash .265, .345, .371. I think that slugging percentage bounces back. The ISO gets up a little bit higher, maybe hits more home runs, more doubles, etc. And he becomes more of just a solid overall hitter. So I like him there. And I've never really liked Zunino. I just don't think he has the contact ability to really present too much of a value in the game.
I think between these are definitely not two of my favorite guys on this list. And I think that if I have to choose one of them, I think I'm going to go with Zunino just because he has a team. I don't know where Lucroy is going to end up. And I think that the ceiling
is a
little.
He'll have a team. He'll have a team.
Oh, he will definitely. It just, I don't know how much that affects, you know, what he's going to be able to do, you know. Where do you think he'll go, Lenny? Any ideas?
You know what? I'm really thinking that it's going to be the Mets, but I've kind of changed my thinking on that. I really don't have any idea.
Yeah,
I did get some information about Realmuto, but I got nothing on Lucroy. I thought the Mets would take him until I discovered something that I'll talk about in a little bit with their present catcher.
Okay. So I go with Zunino just by a little bit. I mean, a 36% K rate kind of scares me a little bit. And I don't know. I don't know if you see more of what he did last year or more of what he was able to do before with the 207 batting average. But I think I'm going to take that risk if I'm looking at a guy in the middle rounds that I've got to choose between the two. But it's very close for me. I don't think if I had to choose, if I got either one and I had to have one of those two, I don't think I'd be disappointed either way. But I don't think that these are either guys that I'm looking at to actively draft. But I'll go with, I'll give Zunino the edge by just a little bit.
I do like that, you know, like you said, Lenny, there was some perhaps mechanical adjustments that Zunino made. And the numbers, you know, on the surface, at least, did look better. But I'm not buying his underlying numbers. You know, a 355 BABIP against a career 273 BABIP. And that was just to hit 251. So yeah, he still struck out 37% of the time with a 46% fly ball rate. That adds up to a pretty low average still to me. So I do definitely believe in the power, but I've got sucked in by Zunino like seemingly just year after year, and he just burns me all the time. So I have a little bit of a personal grudge against him. So I'm going to just go with LuCroy here. I'm probably not going to take a chance on either of these guys. But LuCroy last year was just so freaking weird. He just fell off so hard completely out of nowhere that either he's just completely toast, or I think that he was hiding an injury all season long and there's going to be a huge bounce back from him. And it does suck that he doesn't have anywhere to play right now. So, you know, that's a big question mark. We don't know if it's going to be a good lineup, bad lineup, the ballpark, all that kind of stuff. But I think if I'm choosing between these two, I'm just going to hope for a huge bounce back from LaCroix.
So can I say something? I don't know, you know, how we go around here, how this goes, but
go for it. Just whenever you, whatever you want to interject.
Man, I'm sorry, Van, did you have a chance to talk about Zunino? I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I did. Yeah. We're good. You can go for it.
Oh, because I'm just going to ask the question. How much do we really consider strikeouts today? Strikeouts as opposed to a guy grounding out. I know it's contact, but if somebody strikes out 37% of the time and hits you 25 home runs and knocks in 70 runs and his batting average is 230, whether he strikes out, grounds out, pops out, to me, strikeouts, by the way, is killing Major League Baseball, not the pace of play. But and I'll explain that to you if you want. But the thing is, how much are we really concerned about the strikeout rate?
To me, if I'm looking at a hitter and evaluating him going forward, it's right around 28%. If they're above 28%, that's enough that it's too much. That I think if we're looking at Zunino, it's because that's just too much. If you're swinging and missing that much, that means you're just not making contact with the baseball, which means you either can't do it or you're swinging at bad pitches. So something in that line tells me that something is wrong with that hitter. If it's below 28%, I don't care. It's like Mike Trout strikes out 27, 28% of the time. Who cares? I mean, I don't care if he does it because he does everything else well.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I don't use like necessarily one number, like because there's so many different approaches. But even, you know, the likes of, I mean, when you get into the likes of Mike Zunino and like Chris Davis with a C who strike out 35%+ of the time, that's when it's really hard to overcome that and hit for any kind of batting average. So when you get around, you know, 30%, like you said, 28-30%, there are guys who can make that work, but it's really hard when you're up over 35%. And I just, you know, we've seen him do it his entire career, and that's why I'm just hesitant to buy in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think strikeouts, I don't really care how much a guy strikes out, if he's doing the stealing bases and, you know, if he's getting me what I want, but I think strikeouts are killing Major League Baseball. You know, there was a game last year with Tampa and the Yankees. 349 pitches were thrown. 40 balls were put in play. That's it. There were 27 strikeouts, 15 or so walks, 13 hits, and only 40 balls put in play. They talk about the pace of play, and what's killing baseball is the lack of action. I don't care if the game goes 15 minutes less, 15 minutes more. But there's no action. There's ball. There's walks. There's foul balls because the stadiums, they don't allow you to catch foul balls, and because the pitchers are throwing so hard and guys are fouling balls off. I'm telling you guys, the lack of action in baseball It has nothing to do with the pace of play. And strikeouts, I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, you know, I just wrote an article for Fantrax that I did a bit of studying on about three true outcome players. And for the uninitiated, that's, of course, meaning they come up to the plate, they're either going to strike out, hit a home run, or a walk. The home runs are exciting. The home runs are up, so fans like that. But you're right. The walk and the strikeout, that's boring for an average fan because nothing happens. They would much rather see, you know, a hard hit ground ball where the infielder has to make a nice play to get it. So that's absolutely right. And just to give you some numbers with that, what I determined for three true outcome players is I looked at since the year 2000 players who hit more than 18 home runs in a minimum of 350 plate appearances, struck out over 25% of the time and walked over 10% of the time. And in the early 2000s, it was like 3, 4, 5. It was 19 in 2017 and 11 in 2016. It's insane how many more players are doing that and how the game is changing. So I completely agree with that analysis. I hadn't thought about it, but I really like that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And we're going to move along. We've got our last ADP wars here to get to, and that is Wilson Ramos at 269 against Brian McCann at 272. So Wilson Ramos or Brian McCann, Lenny?
Well, I'm going to take Wilson Ramos without a question. And one of the reasons is that I don't really have a lot of confidence that the Astros are going to get JT Realmuto, but I'm hearing about it, and sometimes I hear it right. So I'm going to go with Ramos. And I know McCann made a lot of adjustments last year. And the reason I know that was that my former partner, Irwin Zwilling, was on a plane with his parents and sat next to him. They were telling him, you know, he's trying to hit everything to left field, left field. And it was really cool. He called me when his flight landed. I sat next to Brian McCann's parents, and they were telling me how he's going to left field on every pitch. So, nice. And what so he's going to wind up hitting about 240. All right. So there you go.
Yeah, very good. I agree with you. I think I'm going to take Wilson Ramos here. I think it really kind of boils down to upside versus consistency because McCann has been so consistent over the last, you know, however many years. However, that consistency is basically he's going to hit 230 to 240. He's going to walk a decent amount, and he's going to hit you 18 to 20 home runs. We saw a pretty big drop-off in plate appearances last year. He went from his usual 500 down to about 400, and I think that's going to be the case going forward. He is a little older. The Astros know they don't want to play him every day. They can get Gattis behind the plate every now and then to spell him, so I don't think we're going to see any more of those 25-plus home run seasons out of McCann. And to be honest with Ramos, he proved that he's healthy after the knee issue last year. Played 200 or had 224 plate appearances, hit 11 homers. The triple slash line was meh. It was 260, 290, 447. But again, returning from that injury, I give him a little bit of pass for that. So I think he could get that batting average back up there. And if he gets 400 plate appearances, I think you're going to get 20 plus home runs. So I'll definitely take Ramos as a good buyback opportunity here.
Yeah, and I think it's going to benefit him to have a season with spring training and be, you know, have the offseason to get ready and be healthy. And so I'm going to go Ramos as well. And, Vanny, you and I kind of talked about these guys a little bit. Or actually, we talked about him a lot because we went over 2 hours in the catcher preview. But I think all things are going to be pretty similar between these guys. But I think you alluded to the fact that I think the ceiling with Ramos is a little bit higher. I'm a Rays homer as well, so I'm going to take him there also. But I think you can get 20 homers out of both, but I think the average is going to be a tick higher on the Ramos side. I think he's going to give you a little bit more overall. And, that kind of throws a wrench into, Lenny's saying about JT Realmuto going there. It could be a long shot, but if it does, I think that definitely will affect McCann more than anybody else in this whole scenario. So now kind of to speak to that, Lenny, does that mean that Gattis goes to DH full-time and then McCann just becomes the backup then?
Oh, well, McCann's real value is as a team leader.
Yeah.
But, I've just heard those reports, and I've heard that it's a Kyle Tucker package coming back to Miami or the Marlins, whatever they are. And but look, I'm not making any kind of decisions based upon it. I'm just bringing it up because, look, if it happens, then Lenny Melnick's a genius. If it doesn't happen, nobody will remember. All right. But no. That's, but I did hear that. So, but nonetheless, I'll go with Ramos anyway.
Yeah, that'll be a watch. That'll be a done deal by the time this thing posts on Friday.
Yeah. Well, I hope it happens in a couple of minutes. So,
there you go. Yeah, we could break the news. Yeah, I'm gonna we're gonna sweep this one. We split the last one. We're gonna sweep this one. McCann's gonna be 34. Yeah, Gattis is gonna spend time at catcher. Max Stassi is gonna spend time at catcher. I think they'll sit McCann quite a bit to keep him fresh throughout the season. You know, much better lineup with the Astros than what you'll have with Ramos. Sorry, Ron. But I do think that Ramos still gets the playing time advantage over the course of the season and probably hits for just as much, if not more power than McCann, with a better average and probably similar runs in RBI. So
you're trying to tell me the Rays are not going to be explosive on offense?
They might not be. Hey, hate to break it to you. Yeah, sorry, man. But we're going to take a break here and then come back on the other side with bargains, busts, and deep sleepers. I really don't mind what happens now and then, as long as you'll be my friend at the end. If I go nasty, will you still call me Superman? If I'm alive and nasty, all right, we have returned, and we're going to do some bargains, busts, and sleepers. Lenny, we'll start with you. Some bargains, or at least one bargain, at the catcher position this year. I'll force you to choose one.
You will, huh? Let's put it this way. I think one of the bargains could be, as I mentioned, but alluded to before, about I thought LaCroix was going to the Mets, and then I had a conversation with one of my Met pals who was telling me, really, about somebody. When I was in the Met clubhouse a couple of years ago, I met this guy. I thought he was the towel boy. I thought he was the high school kid who was cleaning up the joint. And it happened to be Travis d'Arnaud, who doesn't look like a – I mean, believe me, that looks like a high school kid. That was a couple of years later, and he hasn't played well. You know, he was hitting like 240, something like that. But then all of a sudden something happened, and he made a big adjustment in September, and it was really – It was discovered that he was not keeping his eye on the ball. Something so simple, but it's really complex. And, you know, he even mentioned that all he has to do is keep his eye on the ball. And when he pulled his head off the ball, his natural loft of the bat cut off, and he made an adjustment, and bingo. You know, he didn't become an all-star, but things started to click in, and he was hitting close to 300. So I'll say that if the Mets don't get Jonathan Lucroy, and that could happen in a couple of days, and if it does, then forget about what I'm saying. But if it doesn't, then the Travis d'Arnaud is somebody who I think could look, again, I love these players who announce they're making an adjustment, and then I watch the results. If the results are good, you got to take a look at it. So that's what he did back in September. And I just learned that a couple of days ago. So I'm going to go with Travis d'Arnaud.
I completely agree. I had him on my list. He's currently being drafted as the 19th overall catcher at ADP of 322. So, I mean, you're not investing a whole lot in him. And he did hit his 16 home runs last year and hit 244. So if there's truth to Lenny's statement and the average boosts up, that means the OBP is going to boost up. If he gets plate appearances, maybe that boosts up a little bit and you get a little more home runs. So I like him a lot there. One guy I wanted to mention was Francisco Mejia. He's currently 18th on the ADP at 302. Doesn't have a job, but if something were to happen in Cleveland and he gets a job, I think he'll hit enough to warrant a much better return on your investment. But that's a big if. And then, of course, I wanted to mention Wilson Ramos, who we just spoke about. He's 14th overall on ADP at pick 269. Not paying a whole lot for him, but I, again, think you get pretty good value for that guy, too.
Yeah, I was going to – Mejia was my number one guy. I like him a lot I think they're going to find a place to put him. No?
You're going to kill me, both of you, but I'm going to tell you something. I got to interrupt you, but I have to tell you. I was in the Arizona Fall League for a month. And I saw Mejia play 7 games. He is tremendous, okay? He's a natural hitter. But he's not a big guy, and he played third base every single game. And I talked to scouts and people. They want him to play third base. They think because of his size, he will wear out behind the plate, and they are grooming him to be the third baseman for the Cleveland Indians. That will force him to lose a lot of value, but I'm not counting him as a catcher anymore. He's going to be a third baseman.
So how did he do at third base? Did you like what you saw defensively?
He was okay. You know, sometimes you can play third base and get two balls. It's hard to tell, but I did see seven games. In the past in Arizona, I'd go there and see one or two games, but I stayed there for the entire month, and I saw a lot of guys play six, seven games. Look, I tell you what, every time he touched the ball, it was great contact. And he's got a little bit of power. He's got 15 to 20 home run power, but he's not going to catch. And you take a look at him, and you can see why. He appears slight of build. You know, he's not. He's kind of, you know, he's got some muscle. But nonetheless, third base is where they want him to be.
Well, if he can get that catcher eligibility for 1 year and play third base up there, I'm happy with that. I'll take that. But, yeah, beyond that, I agree. One other thing, too, that I threw out there in the preview that we did is if you take and you have the roster space to do this. Now, it depends on if you're playing in a two-catcher league or one-catcher league, whatever. But if you're able to get Tyler Flowers and Kurt Suzuki and be able to flip-flop whenever they start, if you add up their production that they put up last season and they can come close to that, if you go and add those numbers up, you'd be surprised at the numbers if you can put them together at one as one catcher, if you could do that, what they put up. So if you're able to do that, you have enough room on your bench. I don't normally like rostering two catchers if I'm playing in a one-catcher league. I definitely don't have more than two if I play in a two-catcher league. But if you're able to do that maybe in a one-catcher league and just kind of swap them out and you have daily moves, having those two guys to flip-flop whoever's starting is going to get you better production, I think, than what you might expect to get from them.
Which two guys were those? I forgot.
Tyler Flowers, Kurt Suzuki. Yeah.
If I could say one thing about that, the other team that's interested in Real Muto is the Atlanta Braves, mm-hmm. and that to me is makes sense, because you know, of course Miami is rebuilding from the ground floor, and what does every team need when you rebuild? They want pitching, and the Braves with Soroka and Allard and Max Fried and all these guys, they could give them two or three pitchers in exchange for Real Muto. And also Tyler Flowers, next year he's a free agent. So I do think that tandem could be split up if they have a chance to get Remuto. But I agree. I think they had, 30 home runs last year?
It's closer. Yeah. And I mean, I know it's taking two guys, but you're getting them late. But yeah, it's closer to Gary Sanchez type numbers than you would expect it to be.
Right.
Based on last year.
Yep, you're right.
Yeah, based on last year, yeah, I've seen a lot of Kurt Suzuki as a Twins fan, and I think he's going to come back to earth in a big way this year. As far as my catchers, who do I have? I have my bargain is Chris Iannetta, who is the 23rd catcher off the board on Fantrax ADP 332 overall. Of course, that doesn't count if LaCroix does go back to Colorado, then his playing time goes downhill in a big way. But, hitting in Colorado, you could potentially hit 250 instead of 220 with a bit of power. So there's that. And in case he doesn't get that playing time, you know, just in case LaCroix does go back to Colorado, I'll go down the boards a little bit and highlight Stephen Vogt, who's down at the 28th catcher off the board. He did all right after he was traded to Milwaukee, and they've got a really nice lineup now. It's a nice place to hit. So I think as a second catcher, I would like Stephen Vogt. So let's hate on some guys now. Let's do some catcher busts, Lenny. Who don't you like this year besides all of them?
Besides all of them, yeah, they're all busts to me. I would say, you know, but I'll work it in reverse. I will say I'm going to pick my bust based upon picking a bargain. So my bargain is just Monty Grandal. And in the second half slump, you know, he even had 16 passed balls. It was crazy. And he, of course, Austin Barnes started, 13 out of 15 postseason games. Grandal's going to become a free agent this year. He is, look, if you believe in that kind of stuff, he's going to be motivated. I think that Grandal gets his job back, but every people I'm talking to think that they like Barnes a lot, and I think he's going to be a big disappointment. So he's my big disappointment.
Yeah, and, you know, the more I think about it and have looked at it, I really don't like Brandon Barnes all that much. He finally hit his stride, but he's also 28, so even for a catcher, that's old for a prospect to make it up. But for my bus, I've got two of virtually the exact same player, and it's mostly the first one based on where he's being drafted, the second just because I really don't like him. Number one, Zunino. He's being taken as the eighth catcher off the board at pick 205. It's too rich for my blood for all the reasons we said earlier. And then number two is Austin Hedges at 17th on the board. I think he's Zunino with even less talent. We can see that he can hit for power, but I mean, his batting average is going to be bad, and he doesn't walk. So I think his OBP last year was in like the 250, 260 range. And I think he's just going to hurt your team far more than he's going to help. So I'll avoid both of those guys at their positions.
I also, just to butt in, I thought it was funny that you said Brandon Barnes instead of Austin Barnes.
Oh, did I?
Oh, I thought I was wrong, by the way. I'm looking it up.
Very different guys.
What do I do? Because, you know, I'm not known exactly for my name pronunciation.
I'm going to throw out a couple of Astros here. I'm going to throw out both Astros. I'm not obviously too big on Brian McCann. I don't think you're going to get a whole lot there. And this has nothing to do with the JT Realmuto thing. And Evan Gattis, I don't know exactly what it is about Evan Gattis that I don't like. I don't know if it's the low OBP. I don't know what it is. I don't know if I don't like the fact he only played 84 games last year. I just have I can't really put anything on it other than just a gut feeling that for some reason, I don't think that he's going to produce. I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is. I just am not a fan of based on where he's, I guess kind of for me, it's ADP based upon where he's getting drafted.
Well, you don't have to apologize. I swear to goodness. You know, I know Evan very well. He told me he doesn't like you either.
That's fine.
Yeah, so it's okay, Ron. No problem.
I'm not getting drafted as a sixth catcher overall either. So.
No, you're not. Okay.
Do you actually know Gattis, Lenny?
No, come on. Don't believe anything.
Well, the reason I
don't even know who Yasmani Grandal is. Right?
The reason I want to point that out is, and what I talked about on our catcher preview, is the first real introduction I had to Evan Gattis was, and of course, if you remember how he came up, he was like a fry cook or working at the mall selling cell phones for a while, and then suddenly decided to get back into baseball, and within 2 years he was in the majors succeeding. But he gave an interview with Buster Olney, and it was the hands-down worst interview I've ever heard in my life. He just has no personality to speak. Olney would be like, hey, this is great. Tell us about how you made it to the majors. And Evan Gattis would just go, I did. It's fun. I mean, it was just the worst 10-minute cringe-worthy interview I've ever heard in my life. So I was curious if you had known him and experienced that.
No, I have no idea. But, you know, I started playing fantasy baseball in the mid-1980s. So as much as I hate catchers, that's the clue, who do you think my first sleeper pick was?
Oh, man, 1980s? Boy.
Mid-1980s. I'll only give you a second because it's I'm sure everybody's very interested to know. Right? My first sleeper pick was Benito Santiago.
Ooh, nice. Yeah,
so the fact that I don't like catchers probably stems from that. imagine having that's how much I knew about fantasy baseball. My first sleeper was a catcher.
It's been magic ever since. Yeah, my bust is going to be Mike Zunino, who we talked about earlier. And I also, for what it's worth, agree with everybody that you guys have listed, except for Evan Gattis, who is a very nice man. How dare you, Ron? So our final segment here is going to be deep, deep sleepers. And that is catchers who have Fantrax ADP outside of the top 30. So we're digging deep here, Lenny. You have any nuggets of gold that are buried deep down the ADP?
Bruce Maxwell. Ooh. Remember that guy, the guy with the one knee or whatever? And Andrea and I were at the game where Bruce Maxwell actually kneeled. That was out in Oakland. We went to Oakland to see a game, and he was. And Andy says, look what he's doing. And, yeah, he was. But he is actually – people have just disregarded this guy because of all the stuff that he had with the food delivery guy and all that stuff. So, but he's moving closer to a possible resolution to all his legal problems before spring training in February 14th. And by the way, why are they starting on February 14th? There's only one team that's starting on February 15th. One team with a brain. It's Valentine's Day.
Yeah, can't just wait one day.
Players, yeah. Can't they let the players stay home with their wives on Valentine's Day and then report on the 15th? Washington's the only team that's doing it. So there you go. So, yeah, Bruce Maxwell, I think he's an offensive catcher. He's 27, but everybody is totally disregarding him. And by the way, in the auction format, when you want a guy like a Bruce Maxwell or somebody else, but you don't want to, if you really like him like I do, the way to get him is in the end game. You don't throw out a dollar because then somebody's liable to go two. That could happen. But if you start with $2, nobody's going to go three, and you can guarantee getting him.
Good strategy. I like that. For my deep sleepers, I'll give you two names. One's kind of a cheat because we usually say outside of the top 30, mm-hmm. and this guy is number 30, and that's Manny Pena. He does have power. He hits for good average. I don't know how much playing time he's going to get, but if he gets enough, you're going to get enough value out of him that it should work. And then next up is going to absolutely require an injury because that's Carson Kelly at pick number 41. Yadier Molina plays 1,000 games every year, but if something horrible were to happen and he breaks a hand or something or other, then Kelly's going to get his shot and you're going to get some value out of him. But that's also why he's ranked so low, is because we know we have Molina ahead of him who's not going to cede playing time unless something drastic happens.
I like the Carson Kelly there. I had him on my short list. A guy that I've thrown out here is because his defense is going to keep him in the lineup. Got a gold glove last year. That's your boy Van Martin Maldonado out there for the Angels. Hit double-digit home runs. But when we get to this point, guys, you're not going to get much more than that. If you throw a dart at this guy, you'll get a little bit of production if you decide to go at the top 30. I hope your draft doesn't get so bad that you have to draft catchers out of the top 30, though. but if you do, he's a guy you might throw out there just to give you a little bit of double digit pop, but there's not much to like other than that.
Well, you know, I have to agree with you guys on Carson Kelly, and because look, he didn't play a lot last year. He's the next catcher, and it's time for Molina to be the coach. But the other thing I found out also in Arizona, the other catcher that they were looking at, Andrew Knizer or something like that, he started playing first base. So he's playing first base. And it was funny because in Arizona, you go to the fall league, it's really terrific. You hear the sounds of baseball. And one of the sounds I heard was Andrew Knizer. That's how he pronounced his name. Knizer or something like that. He's playing first base and he's talking to the first base coach from the other team. And you can hear the conversation as if you were sitting next to him. And he says, "Hey, thanks for starting a knuckleball pitcher when I'm in the lineup." And the coach said, "You can't hit anybody anyway." It was great. I was wondering what they talk about, right? You know? So it was just fabulous. But yeah, I think Kelly, 23 years old, he's got to start playing. So, you know, he may not be full time, but I think he's putting up the numbers. And also, Blake Swihart is pretty interesting. At age 25, he was a big prospect a couple of years ago, and he's out of options. So they got to do something with him. There's some report that he was going to play second base until Pedroia comes back. But Swihart's a guy. He had a big Dominican League, and I think he's ready to do something. But as catcher eligible, he could put up catcher, you know, decent, reasonable numbers if he gets a chance to play. And I think he's going to be part of a trade.
Yeah, I was glad to be out on him when his hype was through the roof. I thought it was pretty ridiculous at one point. It's as far as what you were saying, Ron, about catchers, hopefully you don't have to draft this deep at all. I mean, trying to get anything out of these guys, like I've said a million times, it's like trying to juice a banana. It's just not good. But I'm going to go with Alex Avila. I think that now that he's signed with Arizona, his ADP will rise a little bit. He's the 32nd catcher off the board at 436 overall. He had really pronounced splits last year. His OPS in the first half was 948, and then it dropped way down to 646 in the second half. But going to Arizona, I think that'll help. But there'll be a middle ground in there somewhere. So if you're looking this deep, I think you'll get something out of Avila anyway. But that's going to wrap us up, Lenny. Thank you so much for joining us. I know you've been a little bit under the weather. I've been feeling that way, too. But you're a hell of a tough guy, so thanks for joining us.
Yeah, and I stayed up very late for you guys.
We appreciate that.
And you changed the time for me, so I love you all. Absolutely do. Thank you.
Awesome, man.
I'm going to sleep now. Can I have my cookies?
Oh, you got to get your plugs out before you take before you go to bed.
My plugs? I only have plugs in my head. Oh, you mean those? What do you want me to say? What I'm having for breakfast tomorrow?
Breakfast, lunch, dinner, social media, and then your website.
Lenny Melnick, fantasysports.com. Every morning, even 24 hours a day, 12 hours a year, 9 a.m., we talk baseball all year round, by the way. And, of course, on Sirius from 8 to 10 Eastern time on Saturday and from 7 to 10 Eastern time on Sunday. And that 7 to 8 slot, you don't want to miss Lenny Melnick and Andrea Lamont in the Family Fantasy Feud show. And I'll tell you, Andrea's been killing it, man. And we have been rocking each other on that show. So if you get a chance to hear that, I'd be very appreciative.
Awesome stuff, Lenny. Definitely everybody needs to follow everything you're doing out there because you're called the legend for a reason. Everything you do is just top notch, and it's always a blast talking to you. So thank you so much for joining us again. Next week, we have Yancey Eaton. We'll be talking outfielders. So until then, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.